In the booth with us is the Pirates general manager, Neil Huntington. A little nicer accommodations, Neil, than last Sunday.
Yeah, the weather.
You look far away right now.
We were basically on top of each other. As I was leaving the booth, I got shooed by the group next to you because I was talking too loudly. So.
Oh, that's right. I was Ron Coomer of the Cubs said, please apologize to Neil Huntington after you left. I said, okay, I will.
Yeah, I was telling a story about how hot it was the last time we were there and that Bob Walk was concerned I was going to pass out on my way out because it was 95. We had a nice rain shower that cooled us off, but yeah, the accommodations were very small. But what a great day.
Yeah.
I mean, just what a fantastic day. And for those, as I said last Sunday, for those fans that love the game and love the game in its purest state, go to the Little League World Series if you can make it happen, because it is the game in its purest state. How good these kids are is awesome to watch. The energy that they play with is just fantastic, and we are fortunate to have been able to participate in it twice, and hope to be able to participate in it again in the future.
It sounded like we had Commissioner Manfred on, and we grilled him a little bit. It sounded as though the Pirates, he wouldn't commit to it, but he said, you know, logistics come into play, and it sounds as though the Pirates might be kind of a semi-regular opponent would make sense. So that could happen.
It'd be fantastic. Yeah. It really would be. And it'd be nice to have an off day the day after. That would be our one significant request. But it is. It's not easy for the players, and it's not easy to take a home game and move it. But what a life experience and part of the reasons we do these jobs is to create lifelong positive memories for those that we interact with. And man, that's a day that it does that above and beyond any normal day.
Neil, it was interesting to have Steve Blass doing the color work during the broadcast. It was also his first time to the MLB Little League Classic. And he said at least a couple times throughout the broadcast, it was really hard for him. And he was trying to figure out if he were one of those players to really understand that this game counts, to not get caught up in that that atmosphere, almost that spring training-like atmosphere.
No question about that. You see, one of the cool things they do is the kids sit in the best seats, the Little League players. So you see the different teams there, whether it's the team from Venezuela, the team from Louisiana, or the team from Curacao, the team from New England. They sit in the very best seats, and some of those seats are right next to the dugout, some of those seats are right next to the on-deck circle, and both teams were absolutely, guilty is not the right word, because it's awesome, but as you're standing on deck ready to go face a major league pitcher, and there's kids behind you engaged with you that want to be where you are, it's hard not to engage with them, but at the same time, it is. It's a meaningful game. It's a game that counts. The statistics count. Everything counts. But it does have much more of a spring training-like atmosphere. But you hope that's part of it. You hope that the guys go out and they enjoy that game and they recognize that while every win is absolutely crucial, that there are also some other elements that come into play that are part of their obligation, responsibilities, and hopefully part of the joy of being a major league player.
This will dovetail into this question. I haven't even written that down and prepping for this, but this was brought up to Clint Hurdle, I think, the day before yesterday. I didn't hear this, but apparently Aaron Boone, the manager of the Yankees, made a suggestion. I can't believe he was serious about baseball looking into a, quote, mercy rule if some team gets too far behind, and that would then cut back on having to use position players. Neil, I'm all for moving the game forward, but it is like somebody anywhere, an MLB Network host, makes a suggestion, and it gets legs. And now all of a sudden, if Greg Brown says, that's a dumb idea, there you are, you know, get off my lawn, you're too old school.
Sure.
When do we stop? When do we, like, really take a breath and go, man, this is the greatest game on earth, and tradition should count for something. Shouldn't we keep the game mostly intact?
Yeah, the one challenge of today, and again, I did not see or listen to Aaron make that quote. How much of it was dead serious, and if he is dead serious, how much of it was in jest, how much of it was answering a question that then the question doesn't get put into his answer, his answer got parsed. I don't know that part of it in this day and age of We don't even call, we text. And with text, you lose the emotion, you lose the intent, you lose. So it's hard for me to comment on it. But you're right, Brownie. Not every time someone disagrees with an idea is it get off my lawn mentality. There are times where I'll throw things out and our group will look at me funny. And there are times where the group will throw things out and we'll all kind of look at each other funny. But you can't kill willingness to be different, but you also can't kill what made this game great. And there is a delicate balance in there for sure.
I said to somebody recently, and I'm not being flippant, I'm dead serious about this. It gets to the point where someone somewhere is going to say, you know what, it takes too long for these guys when they hit a home run and the home run trot and people get mad, they're going too slow, they're standing there watching. A guy hits a home run, he just goes right to the dugout. He doesn't need to trot the bases anymore. That sounds funny, but I'm telling you, somebody's going to bring it up.
Sure.
And then it gets, like I said, gets legs, and now you got to seriously discuss it instead of somebody saying, you know, enough.
Well, and I agree with you. Our challenge is our attendance is declining. That's real. Is it declining because of the negative narrative surrounding the game, because of X, Y, or Z? Is it declining because of we are at risk of losing a generation? Is it so we need to dig deep as to why it's declining. We need to understand why it's declining. We need to understand how we can genuinely impact that. And again, the commissioner's office is really smart people working on that. And openness to ideas is wonderful. Recognizing that there is signal and there is noise, that there are things that are valid and meaningful. And also recognizing their difference of opinions of that. So that's what makes our game great, is it's overcome some of us in the past and it will overcome some of us in the future. But we need to keep what makes this game great, but also we need to continue to grow and evolve and continue to draw fans out and find a way to make the game exciting, find a way to educate those as to what makes the game typically exciting, and then find that balance between new school, old school, and make it the best school that we can for the game and for us as an industry as we move forward.
Maybe touch on this, if not later this show, maybe down the road, get into further detail about the Bob Nightingale story the other day from USA Today, talking to Hall of Famers Goose Gossage, all-time hit king Pete Rose, Lou Piniella, Joe Maddon quoted about this whole subject, how the attendance is declining, and their thoughts, and maybe how maybe we should all take kind of a step back and reevaluate. To evaluate, how about you and the Pirates evaluating to this point forward a guy like Trevor Williams last night? 6 shutout innings, 3 hits, really good, apparently figured out something with his delivery. But 2 things, Neil. It was against the Cincinnati Reds, and he's like 5-0 with an ERA of about 1.5 against the Reds. Maybe just catching the Reds at a good time if you're Trevor Williams.
Yeah, and that's where we work to try to understand when things are going really well, why they're going really well, and how we build upon that. And when things all of a sudden go really well, try to understand why they go really well and not overreact to a short-term positive spike, and also work to not overreact to a short-term negative spike, and try to understand some of the foundational reasons for the good or the bad. And in Trevor's case, it's awesome that he feels good. Certainly fastball command last night was better. Fastball velocity at times last night was as good as we've seen it in a while. And the opponent always has a vote. I mean, every game that we play, the opponent has a vote. And there are times where I read an article the other day, the Astros were playing the Tigers, and it was the most heavily favored game for one team in 20-some years, and the Tigers beat the Astros in the game that was supposed to be the Astros win, and it was supposed to be an easy win. And that's what makes our game great, is you do have to go out and you have to execute pitch by pitch. And going back to Aaron Boone's mercy rule, I was the farm director when the Indians came back and ended up beating the Mariners, and we were down by, I think it was 12 runs and late in the game, and the Indians fought back. Now, it's once in a generation that happens, but that's what makes this game great, is yes, there are metrics and there are statistics, and there always have been, But it is still played by people, and people have strengths and people have flaws, and there are times when a person's going really well, and there are times where all of a sudden the wheels come off, and that's what makes this game so great. So some positive things to build on for Trevor. He felt great. He threw the ball better, and look forward to his next start, trying to build upon this good start.
Neil, are you trying to watch his innings? Because he only threw 84 pitches. He was tossing a three-hit shutout through six innings, and he was not due up at the plate. So after six, he was done. Are you going to kind of do this the rest of the way with him?
Well, his prior start was obviously a quick outing. Every manager in this day and age faces that dilemma of, if you leave the starter in for one inning too long, then everyone will criticize you because everybody knows that a third time through the lineup, you're supposed to take the starter out. If you take the starter out, well, then the criticism becomes you should leave him in because he was pitching really well. So it's an individual decision for the manager, and what is he seeing? What's the quality of contact? What's the pitcher feeling? What's the structure of the bullpen? Who is he trying to get innings for? Is he trying to rest the pen? So there's so many variables that go into it beyond just 6-84 and no runs that the manager and the pitching coach have to weigh as they look to make each and every pitching decision.
All right, we'll continue with the Bucco General Manager, the Neil Huntington Show from PNC Park as the Pirates host the Cincinnati Reds on a Kid's Sunday. More to come on the Pirates Baseball Network. It is the Pirates and the Reds today looking for a sweep after the 14-0 shutout by the Pirates last night and the 3-2 come-from-behind win on Friday night. The Pirates General Manager with us, the Neil Huntington Show, coming your way every Sunday. Neil, tell us about Mitch Keller. That looked like the guy you've been talking about for a while on Friday night.
That was fun to see. The fastball played at the top part of the zone, but he was also able to locate it down and away. I got some soft contact on it. The slider continues to evolve as a pitch for him, not only for a strike, but also for some chases and some swings and misses. And he had a really good curveball. And that thing, when it bites, it's a top to bottom of the zone type break. And the fastball plays really well off it. He attacked the zone. First pitch strike percentage was through the roof, and that's a way Mitch can pitch. If he locates that fastball early in the count and they put it in play and they hit a ground ball to short or they fly out to right field, that's his best friend. But to get ahead, he can now go to his secondary stuff. And the ability to throw first pitch breaking ball for a strike or to locate that fastball, that's going to be really key for him because he has weapons to bury hitters, and he's learning how to get ahead of these hitters, how to get ahead of quality hitters, but a very encouraging outing.
And Stephen Brault also piggybacking that. His start on Thursday night against the Washington Nationals gave up just two first-inning runs in his six innings.
Another good outing out of Stephen and a better slider than we've seen from him here recently. Elevated the fastball with intent, but also was able to sink it down in the zone, get some early count contact, and kept hitters off balance. He continues to get really good results and continues to show that he's going to fight to do everything he can to stay in a major league rotation for a long time.
Neil, I know you've understandably, you've kind of downplayed this idea in the past that you don't care whether the guy's a righty or lefty. The most important thing is, of course, is get guys out, and you want the five best starting pitchers in a rotation. But the evidence seems to be pretty clear with the fact that, in fact, going into that series against the Nationals, there were only three teams in the National League that had winning records against left-handed starting pitching. So isn't left-handed starting pitching even more critical now maybe than ever before for the Pirates?
You know, those numbers certainly play that out, and there's a reason why we've continued to hold on to Stephen Brault as a potential starting pitcher all this time is because it gives a nice twist to your rotation. It makes the opposition think about changing their lineup and maybe take them out of their rhythm a little bit. And then obviously the numbers are bearing out that left-handed pitching is having effect. And it's not like there's really good left-handed pitchers, there's really good right-handed pitchers, but it's not like there's a ton of dominant left-handed starters that would get to those numbers. There's just left-handed pitchers or left-handed starters are getting results.
Do you have thoughts about the system, the Pirates system, whether there are left-handers that might end up getting to the big leagues and be able to help this team?
You know, it's an interesting – we have a couple guys that we think can eventually maybe get to a point where Steven Brault is. As we've gone through the draft, it's always interesting to see the left-handed starters fly off the board, and you almost have to use teacher terms, bell curve a left-handed starter, because that left-handed starter that's, or that pitcher, that generic pitcher that's 88 to 92 with a good feel for a changeup, and can throw a breaking ball for a strike and maybe get some swings and misses on it. There's a lot of right-handers that can do that, and so as a result, that there's the stuff isn't special, but those are your best left-handed pitchers in college baseball. So as you just grade out the pure stuff and how it projects the play at the major league level, there are times where you bell curve a left-handed starter to make him equivalent to a right-handed starter, and we've not necessarily done that. We've tried to honor the quality of the pitches and the projection that we have on them 2, 3, 5, 7 years down the road. But you at times we talked about, do we have to go reach and go get a left-handed starter candidate? Because there's just not a lot of them, and yet they are valuable.
Francisco Liriano is dead set against starting, isn't he? I was wondering about maybe using September as a test month for him.
You know, when Francisco's thrown the ball well out of the bullpen, and he came here with the idea that he'd be open to the bullpen. I think even as we've gone through this year, he's embraced the reliever role, and I think his numbers are bearing out that he's pitched better in shorter exposures. If he were 30 or 27, you might take a different look at it, but we certainly don't want to just bury Francisco in the bullpen, but the effectiveness that he's had and given kind of where he had gone as a starting pitcher, it might be tough to say that he'd be able to go out and throw 175 innings next year, given all things considered.
Now, he's a free agent after this year anyway, isn't he?
He is a free agent, and he may go out into the market and try to find somebody that will start him again, because all pitchers want to start. I mean, even your best relievers, if they had their choices, that they would rather start. But most relievers are failed starters. Rarely does a kid come out of high school as a reliever and go to college as a reliever, get drafted as a reliever. They've all started at some point in their careers, and many of them in the major league bullpens even got to the big leagues as potential starters, but they lacked a third pitch, they lacked command, they lacked stamina, they lacked the ability to get through a lineup multiple times, and they ended up getting moved to the bullpen for the shorter exposure.
Neil, what about Chris Archer's situation? Any update on the shoulder?
Yeah, so Chris had a second opinion on the shoulder, confirmed inflammation in there. We'll reassess in 7 to 10 days, and can we knock that inflammation out? And then what's the build-up program, or how is he feeling as we reassess him in 7 to 10 days?
So this puts it makes it a little bit dicey, does it not? Because doesn't he have an option? And now you're talking about evaluating if he doesn't pitch. You're basically going to go on what you've seen him as a Pirate now as to whether to pick up that option this winter.
Yeah, and if the stuff had regressed significantly, we certainly understand the results are not what Chris anticipated. They're not what we anticipated. We still see the quality slider. We still see the fastball velocity. Even the outing that he left, he was 96, 97 in that inning. And we've seen the ability to avoid big innings. Unfortunately, we've also seen some big innings get away from him. So there's a lot to like with Chris Archer, and we want to make sure that we do the right thing by him. We don't want him to feel like he has to come back out to earn his spot. We see some really positive signs. We recognize the issues and the challenges, but we see some really positive signs and expect Chris is going to be a really good major league pitcher again next year.
Gregory Polanco update at all?
Gregory is working through baseball activities with the hope of getting in some minor league games here before the end of their seasons, which are fast approaching, with the intent of getting back out and playing for us in September. But again, has to go through the baseball buildup, has to get back to game speed. But hoping we'll be able to continue to do that.
Again, that's a little tough for you, isn't it? Because you want to see him at least in September play right. Otherwise, you got to think about 2020. Right?
Yeah, ideally we'd love to see Gregory back out there. One, because we like Gregory Polanco, and he can be a very good major league player for us, and it would be good to get him back in the lineup, and also great for him to go home knowing that he got back to major league competition and he felt good about being out there. And at the same time, it's been great to see Jose Osuna get a cluster of at-bats here and continue to swing the bat well, continue to move better defensively and do some things to solidify his role on this club and a guy that has just continued to do a nice job.
Neil, would you want Gregory Polanco then to play winter ball?
That's a great question, and so much of it, Brownie, will depend upon how he progresses over the next 2 weeks, how he feels in September. This might be the time, if things go as we hope, this will be the time to just let him have an off season off. I mean, he had a long off season of nothing but rehabilitation last year. He worked his tail off last year to come back early, to fight to come back early. And in hindsight, it might not have been the best thing, the best decision that I or we have made to have him come back early. We probably should have kept him going slowly, but all things considered, he fought and wanted to get back and was so anxious to get back and help this club, and did. And then the shoulder started barking at him. So let's see where he is at the end of the month. Let's see where September takes us, and hopefully he'll just go have a nice baseball offseason and come into spring training ready to be the player that he was showing signs he was pre-injury, and then even as he came back from the injury for an extended period of time, showing the signs of that player being a really good major league player.
Neil, any impact on Major League Baseball banning players from Venezuelan winter leagues after President Trump's embargo?
Well, we've talked multiple times that I and we are advocates of players playing winter ball. It's the closest environment we have to a major league environment is when a young player goes to play winter ball. The win now, the intensity of the crowd, the passion of the crowd, it is the real deal. It's the closest thing we have. So a loss of winter ball, we're respecting the politics of it. The loss of a winter ball opportunity for these players, the loss of a chance to make some money for a guy that's in double A or a guy that's in A ball, a chance to go play and continue his growth and development while also being able to hopefully provide for his family a little bit better. It is a challenge, but we respect the politics of it, and we'll find other opportunities for those that we can.
We'll continue with the Pirates general manager. More from PNC Park on the Pirates Baseball Network. Continuing with the Pirates general manager and Neil Francisco Cervelli. You basically granted opportunity to go play elsewhere, and he did, and he had a big night last night in his debut with the Atlanta Braves. How difficult is it to balance what you did with him, because he just wanted to come up and play in the big leagues? He was ready, but having Cervelli play here would have taken time away from Stallings and Diaz, and you're trying to evaluate the catching situation.
Yeah, and Francisco, all he's done for this franchise, all he's done for this city, he's a free agent to be in a really unique situation in that he hadn't played at the major league level in 70-some days, coming back from the concussions, the multiple concussions. As we walked through with him, his rapid advancement in his most recent program to come back from that, we talked with him about, let's put you in a position to be seen by all 30 teams, us included. Let's go to AAA, let's get you in a rehab environment, and if somebody wants to come and get you, or you think that opportunity is going to be out there, let's talk about it. We'll see if we add you to our major league team, and in doing so, we'd have to take Jacob Stallings or Elias Diaz, who could be in our plans for next year and could be in our plans for multiple years to come. We'd have to take one of them off the club, given the long stretch of consecutive games, given our pitching struggles. It's hard to carry three catchers right now. The intent was if he didn't feel like that opportunity were going to be out there, we would activate him on September 1st and he'd become a part of our rotation. Francisco played well, felt really good. A team had a need, so we felt like he felt like there would be an opportunity for him if we were to grant his release instead of bringing him up. And again, it was not an easy situation because I love Francisco and love what he's done for this organization and wanted to keep the door open for the future, and we still will keep the door open for the future. I think that might be tampering what I just did, but we'll keep the door open for the future. But we felt like we were doing the right thing by him to allow him a chance to go compete for the postseason this season, a chance to go earn maybe more playing time than he was going to get here. Trust me, I would have loved nothing more than to have Francisco Cervelli come back and have a big night for us as we're pushing for the postseason, but we're not there. And so as we walked through it with Francisco, with his representative, we felt like this was the right thing to do, felt like he would catch on. He has, and we'll wish him nothing but success and appreciate all he did here. And again, we'll continue to evaluate this as we go forward.
We have one more segment with Neil Huntington, and we'll continue this conversation on the Pirates Baseball Network. It's our final segment with Pirates General Manager Neil Huntington. And Neil, we're piggybacking again on the Cervelli issue. Players like Cervelli, Freddie Galvis, who is playing today for the Cincinnati Reds, was picked up off waivers from Toronto. Astrubel Cabrera, we just saw him do some damage against the Pirates, picked up off waivers from the Rangers. Jared Hughes, the former Pirate, Cincinnati Red, picked up by the Phillies. Joe Panik to the Mets. Adani Echevarria, Billy Hamilton, picked up by the Braves. It looks as though that general managers are finding a way to acquire players after July 31st.
Yeah, it's the new normal in the single trading deadline, as clubs do essentially what we did, although the Cervelli situation is a little bit unique in that he's trying to reestablish himself. We want to help him reestablish himself. But teams that are not in competitive mode are moving on from some veteran players. And in most of those other instances, they've had the opportunity to salvage some salary because player X gets claimed on outright waivers. When a player gets claimed on outright waivers, the claiming team inherits the contract, and the team that technically loses the player on outright waivers gets out from underneath the remaining contract. In Cervelli's case, this was not financially driven at all. We released him. We're on the hook for everything, the remainder of his contract, except a prorated portion of his major league salary minimum is what Atlanta's paying him going forward. We're going to add a third catcher in September, so I guess you could argue we're saving 8 days worth of a prorated portion of $500,000. But in other instances, players are getting claimed on outright waivers. That team is getting out from underneath that contract, and they're able to turn those innings or those at-bats over to younger players. And so it's a different way for the clubs that are in it to acquire players, whether it's via a waiver claim or via they sign a player that somebody else has moved on from via release.
Why not waive them then and get out from underneath the contract, Cervelli?
We felt that the timing was such that time was of urgency. Atlanta had a need. We identified Atlanta having a need, rolled the dice that, and his group rolled the dice that Francisco would be able to land with Atlanta. So, and again, our focus here was to help Francisco Cervelli. Given the risk, given where we were, we didn't feel that he would get claimed on outright waivers, given that he really hadn't caught at the major league level in 70-some days, and he only had played in AAA. Now, he played really well, but only had played in AAA a handful of days. So we felt that we were working to do the right thing by Cervelli, and we did not feel that there was a legitimate opportunity to be claimed on outright waivers, and we didn't want to miss this opportunity with Atlanta because they just simply went in a different direction to acquire a different catcher.
So teams won't, in this winter, won't be picking up guys from these clubs as a thank you. The Pirates won't get anybody from the Braves this winter.
No, absolutely not. And I can't tell you other situations, but we will absolutely not.
But you don't think other teams might not be doing that? It just seems odd that teams that need these players are picking them up, and
sure,
there's nothing in return. I'm sorry, it's only like 40 seconds.
No, and it's a try to answer it as quickly as possible. It shouldn't be happening that way because there's no guarantee that Club X is going to put a player on outright waivers,
right,
and Club Y is going to be the club that claims
right
him. So there's no way to guarantee that. I think it's more as trade waivers used to happen, teams were trying to move on from players that didn't really fit anymore because they were on expiring contracts or they just wanted to dump the contract. That situation still exists. Instead of being able to negotiate the contract down, it's neither all or nothing.
Right.
Either the acquiring team takes on all the contract, or the parting team ends up releasing the player because he just doesn't fit and they want to give the innings to younger players. So that's the quickest answer I can give you with 10 seconds.
Well, we'll maybe pick up on it on a later show. Thanks so much, Neil.
Thanks, Brownie.